Hello and welcome to the programme which looks at the Holy Land. I am Paul Calvert.
Psalm 16, verse 11 from the New King James Bible says this: You will show me the path of life. In your presence is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures for evermore.
I'm with Tricia Miller from Camera, fighting media bias in the news. Now, Tricia, you've just recently had a visit to Israel. Why did you want to come during this time of war?
Hello, Paul, and thank you for having me. I wanted to come because I knew that I needed to be a firsthand witness. Because within days, literally 1, 2, 3 days after October 7th, we started to see the world denying that what actually happened. And the world started turning on Israel and accusing Israel of being responsible, that if anything happened to them, it was their fault. But we saw a lot of denial, and that's very disturbing. I've dealt with Holocaust denial for decades, and it was just very disturbing to see this happening so fast after this event.
When you came to Israel, could you see a difference in the people as you were talking with them?
Yes, I did. I see first the positive. I see a strength. I see a resolve. I see people unified like, you know, never before. There had been more division in Israel, which is one of the things that I think made Hamas think that Israel was vulnerable and they could attack now. But so unfortunately, the war has brought more unity, but I do see a strength and a resolve and an understanding that they must win this war. They must defeat Hamas so that it cannot do again what it did on October 7th. But I also saw that the nation as a whole and individuals are traumatized. There's not one person in Israel who is not directly connected to what happened. You know, either they have a family member or they know somebody, a neighbor, whatever, who was either there, who was murdered, who was taken hostage, or who is in the IDF.
What did you do on the visit and where did you go while you were here?
Well, I was there over 2 weeks. The first part of the trip was I came to join a mission that was put together by Israel 365 and NRB, which is the National Religious Broadcasters. It's the largest organization for Christian media in the world. And Troy Miller, the president of NRB, was on the mission with us. It was an agenda that was specifically designed for Christians in media. There were 7 of us all together on the trip. It was better than I even expected. I had been waiting for months to find the right trip to go. And when I was invited to join this one, which was planned pretty short notice, I knew that it was the right one because of the meetings they were going to have and what they were going to do. We met with President Herzog. We met with members of the Knesset. We met with other officials, elected officials, unelected officials, appointed officials. We met with survivors, rescuers. We met with family members of hostages. We went to Kfar Aza and we had a tour there led by a man who is a resident and is a survivor of October 7th. We also had with us Zaka members at the Kfar Aza, and also when we went to the Kfar graveyard, we were given a tour there by another member of Zaka. And both of these, or for people who might not know, Zaka is the organization that it is a search and rescue organization. They prefer, obviously, to rescue wounded people, people they can save, but a lot of their work ends up being also recovering remains of people who have been killed, in this case, murdered in all kinds of horrible ways. So we were given pretty graphic briefings about what they found in the cars, on the roads, people trying to escape October 7th, but also what happened in the different kibbutzim that day.
You get a chance to meet with survivors of October the 7th massacre. Did they share their stories? What other stories did they share?
The man who gave us the tour of Kfar Aza, his particular house where he was in his safe room, it was not attacked. You know, the terrorists rampaged through these different communities. They didn't get to every house in every one, thankfully. His particular house was not attacked, but his daughter was at his sister's house for a sleepover that night, you know, that Friday night before the attack happened on Saturday morning. And they're in their safe rooms. They all survived too, but you know, I can't imagine what a parent goes through knowing that their daughter is, you know, in that kind of danger, even though he wasn't. But when he gave us the tour, he told us the stories of the people who lived in the destroyed homes we were seeing. Literally, we were seeing just rubble or just concrete walls left with, they were burned. Because what the terrorists did, if they couldn't get into the safe room where the people were hiding, they would burn down the house. They'd put the house on fire so that the people would be forced to come out. And so we were seeing these burned remains of homes. And he told us the stories of the people who lived there because they all knew each other. These are close-knit communities. And the deep trauma that was evident in him and also in the Zaka members who were also part of these tours and told us their experiences. This is a trauma like nothing they've ever experienced and nothing they ever expected to have to go through because they weren't supposed to, they were supposed to be safe in their country.
You got the chance and the opportunity to meet hostage family members. That must have been very emotional, especially the fact that there are still many hostages in Gaza at the moment.
Yes, right now there's 116 hostages still. A couple of weeks ago, the IDF pulled off an amazing rescue of four, got four living hostages out. There's still 116. I've heard different numbers of, you know, different estimates of how many of those are actually still alive. Nobody really knows, but maybe half. But the IDF is determined to rescue every single one, whether they're alive or not, and bring them back to Israel. So yes, we met with four different family members. They were together. It was all at the same time. We were at the government press office in Tel Aviv and had a briefing from the head of the GPO as well. But that's where they brought together these four family members. And they just told us the story of their family member. In each case, in this case, it was all parents of a child, you know, an adult child. But we were hearing from the parents of the person who is in captivity.
Are they still waiting to hear about their family? None of them have been released.
One of the four has been told that her son is not alive, but she is still, and this is so typical of a parent, you know, she's still holding out hope. She said, I've been told that he's not alive, but she still has hope.
Wow.
The other three don't know. They haven't been told anything.
So since October the 7th, they've heard nothing.
Right.
This must be like 8 months worth of torture then.
It is. I've heard so many, besides these four, I've heard so many on video. They just talk about how it's still October 7th for them and they're not sleeping. Mm. And it's just, you know, it's like one eternal nightmare. And they just start every day with, you know, what are they going to do today to try to campaign, to try to do something to get the release of their loved ones.
Is it important to capture all these stories from the hostages and also from the survivors of the massacre?
Yes, it is. Because again, back to the denial that's going on, which is so incredible to me, because the vast majority of all the video that we have of that day was taken by the terrorists themselves. They took it with their GoPro cameras because they were proud of what they were doing. They were publicizing it live even as they were doing horrible atrocities, raping and mutilating and burning people alive because they were proud of it. They wanted the rest of the Arab world to know what they were doing. They were hoping to incite people to come and help, you know, join in. So the fact that people are denying it is, it just shows a stubborn, it's an intentional decision to deny anything that happens to the Jews. The behavior, if they admit that anything happened, they're justifying the behavior of terrorists who did horrible atrocities. And underlying that is all, it's anti-Semitism. There's no other way to explain it because it's not rational. So yes, it's important to share these testimonies. It was important to me. I knew I had to be there to say, I have been there. I have seen the destruction. This is not made up because too much of the world wants to deny it.
You went to the Carr graveyard. What is the Carr graveyard and what was that like? Explain what you saw there.
They collected all of the cars that were attacked on that day, whether they were in a kibbutz or whether they were on the roads anywhere in the area trying to leave. People were trying to flee once they figured out what was going on. A lot of the cars were belonged to the people who were escaping the music festival. We also went there, the site of the Nova Music Festival, where there were thousands of young people just there for all night to party, to dance, to be together. And there were two different stages there, you know, with bands. It was largely for dancing. It was a music festival. So a lot of the cars were from there, but they've collected all the cars in this one place and they are piled high. You just see hundreds and hundreds of destroyed cars piled high, 30, 40 feet high, piles of cars. Some of the cars they've left, you know, down on ground level. You can see how they were completely burned. They're riddled with bullets, completely destroyed ambulances. The terrorists targeted ambulances first. They wanted to make sure that nobody could help anybody who was wounded. And so the person who was describing, you know, what happened in this car and this pickup truck and was, like I said, was a member of Zaka, and he had been there, that he was one of the ones who was responsible for cleaning out any human remains from each of these vehicles. So they've made it they have a flag. It's an impromptu kind of memorial site. They've made it a memorial site. They have a sign there at the beginning that says Zakor, to remember, the Hebrew word for remember. And they have an Israeli flag, and it's a place to for people to come to remember this horrible atrocity.
Now, you had a tour of Kfar Aza. That must have been very moving, going through Kfar Aza, where a lot of this stuff actually happened.
Yes, it was. When you approach the gate and you come in, it's just this beautiful, beautiful, peaceful place. You can tell that it was a beautiful community. People loved to live there in peace. But then when you get past the initial open area where you come into the kibbutz and start walking down the streets and see the destroyed homes. And one of the streets that they targeted, they obviously specifically targeted, was, our tour guide told us, this is where all the young couples lived. They were smaller homes, you know, just more like a studio apartment kind of size, you know, that you would picture, because it was just for the young couples starting out life. So people who didn't have children yet. And that street was completely annihilated, completely wiped out. So this attack was very planned. It had been planned for many, many months. The evidence that they found in terrorists' pockets were detailed maps. The terrorists knew exactly who lived in which house, how many people were in each house, where the guns were in the community, which houses had dogs, because, you know, they needed to kill the dogs too, because dogs run out to defend their people. So the terrorists had this incredible amount of intelligence that had been given to them before this attack.
So would that be from workers who came to work from Gaza into Israel?
Yes. The really ironic, horrible tragedy of this, I mean, as if this whole attack isn't tragic enough as it is, but the irony is that the people who were attacked are the people in Israel who are the strongest advocates for peace. And they intentionally lived that close to Gaza because they wanted to demonstrate that they could make peace with the Palestinians, with the people who live in Gaza. And they employed a lot of them. A lot of the people from Gaza came over the border every day to work in these people's homes, in their fields. They're all, you know, all the kibbutz, they're farmers. They all have fields. They're all agriculturally based. So there were many workers from Gaza coming across the border, and they're the ones, some of them, who drew the maps, did the detailed maps of every kibbutz, and the terrorists knew where to go.
Was it important for you to personally go and see all these places?
Yes, it was very important because of the denial that's happening. And because I need to be able to say that I've seen it, even in the Christian world, there's a lack of knowledge. There's some confusion. The evangelical world, which is my specific focus, is susceptible to false narratives that come from the Palestinian Christians, and especially in the Bethlehem area. And if Christians don't know the facts, they can be deceived.
You're fighting the media war. Is the media shaping the opinion?
Yes, media is definitely shaping the opinion. And for many Christians who just watch mainstream media, they're not getting the facts, to say the least. And in many cases, they're getting lies. And then if you compound that with the fact that too many Christians today are pretty biblically illiterate, they don't really understand what the Bible says about God's heart for the Jewish people, and they are susceptible to a narrative of peace and justice. And some of the Palestinian Christian theologians, leaders, play on that, make up false narratives, create a false history, and play on the sympathies of Christians who Christians care about people. That's all good. Christians want peace and justice. Christians want to stand up for the underdog. That kind of narrative that's presented by the Palestinian Christians, but they don't understand the theological or the historical errors in the narratives they're being told. And so when you put that on top of what's happening in the mainstream media, there's a lot of deception and a lot of misunderstanding going on. And that's why I needed to say, no, I've been there. I've seen this. I've heard from the people that this did really happen. And it was in spiritual terms, it was a completely demonic attack. The things that were done were just, these people didn't just go in to kill. They did horrible, horrible atrocities. And it's demonically inspired. That's the foundation of anti-Semitism anyway, the hatred of the Jews. But we saw a horrible manifestation of that on October 7th.
Are there specific Christians who are pushing a false narrative?
Yes, a lot of it comes from Bethlehem Bible College. The president, Jack Serra, the Bethlehem Bible College hosts Christ at the Checkpoint conferences every other year that attract Christians from the West to come, and they are inundated with this Palestinian narrative, which says that the Jews there now are not related to the ancient Israelites. The Jews there now weren't even there. They've only come in the last couple hundred years. They weren't even there when Jesus was born. That they, the Palestinians, are the indigenous people of the land. So the conclusion they get from all that, of course, is that Jesus is a Palestinian. He can't be Jewish because there were no Jews there. So, you know, they're completely rewriting the Bible to support this false historical claim that they belong there, that they have the right to the land and the Jews have no right to be there. So when Christians hear this, then this supports the Christian vulnerability in the West, who, like I said, is sometimes pretty biblically illiterate and doesn't know the facts on the ground. This Christian audience is then swayed by that. And they, you know, they want to support the Palestinian cause because it's presented to them as the Palestinians are the victims and these Jews don't belong there. They're illegal occupiers. And so there, you know, fast forward to October 7th, and that's why I'm seeing some Christians not understanding why Israel needs to do what it's doing to take out Hamas to prevent this from happening again. And so some Christians, unfortunately, are turning against Israel and its right to defend itself.
So Christians need to be very, very careful who they listen to, but they also actually need to go into like the book of Genesis and really read and understand the foundations of their faith and the Jewishness of the Bible as well, don't they?
Yes, they need to start with the beginning of Abram's life before his name was changed to Abraham even, and read about the covenant that God made with him. And God called it an eternal covenant, and he promised Abraham descendants and this land, this particular land that God led Abraham to go to when he called him to leave Mesopotamia, which is now modern day Iraq. Abraham came from the land that's between the Tigris and Euphrates River in Iraq. God called him to go to a land that he would show him. And it's emphasized over and over, this is a specific land. In Genesis, God even gives the borders of the land, which is a lot larger than what Israel is living in now, even. But the covenant that God made included descendants and land. And it's emphasized over and over. And Christians need to understand this and the fact that it was an eternal covenant. Those words are used over and over throughout the scriptures. God made an eternal covenant, and God does not break his covenant.
What is your prayer for Israel at this time?
My prayer for Israel is ultimately for peace. We're instructed in the Bible to pray in the Psalms, to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. So to pray for peace, but to more specifically right now, to pray for wisdom for Israel's leaders, government leaders, and the leaders of the IDF. Pray for wisdom and just courage to do what needs to be done. Wisdom to know exactly how to do it and courage to do what needs to be done.
What's your website for people who'd like to know more about the work that you do?
It's www.camera.org. That's the general camera website. Camera monitors all the media about the Middle East, especially Israel. And then I have a website That's also for Cameras Partnership. And that's Cameras Partnership, no apostrophe S, just camera'spartnership.org. And people can email me at tricia@camera.org. You have to spell my name, T-R-I-C-I-A, tricia@camera.org, if you have any questions.
Well, Tricia, thank you very much for sharing today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us today. Pray that God will move by his mighty power in the Holy Land and bring his peace.